Documentaries.
Uh-huh.
History. Insights. Interviews. Chef's Deep Dive.
And welcome to Chef's Deep Dive, and this week's guest is John Aitken. Yeah, let me list this out. Proctor Who, Take This Out, Trek mm-hmm. This Out, sorry, Take Your Seats, and The Lynch Mob with me. He's also got a YouTube channel called Simply Woodworking. This guy's a podcast tart, and he's on my show. Thank you very much.
I'm not even a podcast tart, I'm just a tart.
I wish it was a tart.
I'm not, I don't think I could like justify it by saying I'm a podcast tart. I'm a digital slag is what I am. Yeah.
Well, now, are you taking some time off, aren't you? One of them is like a month hiatus or something.
Yeah, we're taking a month hiatus on Trek This Out and Proctor Who.
Oh, right, both
just,
of them.
Just giving everybody a break, and we're starting up again in October with both of them.
Oh, right, but you're still keeping the Take Your Seats one, aren't you?
Yeah, because we're dedicated pros. Yeah. We'll churn them out till we die.
So you still do your Take Your Seats, you still do your Lynch one with me, and knowing that you've got some spare time ahead, I'll put you down for a couple more Chef's Deep Dive. Yeah!
Lovely. Perfect. Just what I need. Just what I need in this month of rest.
Cerebral shit at the end.
Yeah, that's what we need. Keeps the mind ticking over, Chef.
It did with this film. It keeps us going. I'm so glad that you picked a film that I haven't seen. There's so many times that people pick a film which I've seen and I'm going to review it. So this was a turn up for the books. And wow, it is harrowing as well.
Yeah, that's an understatement, I think. I mean, the reason I picked this film was because I've always had it in my mind, like not like all the time, but it's always been, if I think of a traumatic, harrowing film that really affected me, then I always end up going back to this one because I don't think it was anything special. When I must have watched it in my early 20s.
Yeah.
But it just stuck with me, and I remember being fascinated by the subject matter. I remember going to the library almost instantly after I saw this film and got the book, and then I went through any books in the library that had multiple personality disorder, because I found the whole thing fascinating. I think the reason for that is Sally Field's performance in this film.
Yeah, she's outstanding, isn't she?
And just the story, I mean, there's controversy with it.
Yeah, yeah.
There are issues, but if I sort of disassociate myself from that, no pun intended, but if I disassociate myself from that and just watch it as a film that I believed was a true story, it just goes right through me. It hits me right in the heart, and it's just
I think that's it.
It's amazing.
That's the type of film, isn't it? When it comes to a true story, you're looking at it in two levels. One, a piece of artistic work. As for a film, which in this is brilliant, and a score by Leonard Rosman, just perfect, and it's haunting, isn't it? When he attaches it to it, it's perfect. And
it's only a TV movie. It's not even a proper movie, but I mean, it's been released on DVD since. Yeah. But there was a bit of a campaign by people to try and get it into DVD. But it's amazing that you have a TV movie that in 1976 that people still watch today, and people are still fascinated by, and and like I say, I don't think many people know about this film. I think people of a certain age will, because it was certainly in the 70s, it was a massive hit when it came out, but it's not really had much in terms of like rewatches.
Not on the
anything that's come out recently. No.
Not on the rewatch. It did have a remake in 2007. Which I didn't bother looking into. But I believe they just followed the very similar storyline exactly as this, and then just concluded it with her death with the woman who actually it was based upon.
I think the problem with that was, like, this was a TV movie, so they had basically two movies in one. Yeah. This is like 2 days it was like released. The original release time was something like 3 hours, 18 minutes, and that's the one we watched.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was over two nights. But this, the 2007 film, and I think I've seen it, it's just, it skips a lot.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that you can't have that 3 hour runtime in a normal bog standard film. And the good thing about Sybil is that you see a lot.
Yeah.
You get a lot of backstory that makes you properly engaged with it.
Yeah, you get really connected to the characters, don't you?
Yeah.
It's like I did it throughout an entire night, and I watched yeah. like an hour and a half of it, and then I went had some tea and watched the other hour and a half. And it didn't yeah. feel like 3 hours, even though it was 3 hours.
No.
Because the story is so compelling. You want to know what's going to happen. And it starts straight yeah. off, doesn't it? Straight off, you're in the middle of her life. And it's yeah. such a clever way to start, because it's neither the end of the film nor the beginning of the film. It's like boom, this is what's happened and yeah. how to deal with it.
I think the woman who played the psychiatrist.
Dr. Cornelia Wilbur.
Yeah, it's played by Joanne Woodward, who was like a big star in the 70s as far as TV and movies go. And she was always kind of like playing second fiddle to the star of the show. But she's just as convincing as the sort of empathetic, caring kind of psychiatrist that is the seed of the story that you actually read about if you read the book as well.
She goes out of her way. Well, you know, we're taking it as a film piece. She goes, it makes it look that she goes way out of her way beyond the point of, you know, this is a typical case of which I get paid for. Because she goes out of her way, like having to stay at home, giving her food, you know, tried to track yeah. down her parents and stuff like that.
Yeah, she, I mean, we'll get to the controversy of it.
Yeah.
But she was... She definitely went all in. I mean, if we just look at it in terms of the film, yeah. the character does go all in and like, I mean, she must have been as emotionally affected by Sybil's plight
yeah.
as I was watching it, because, I've got to be honest, for like a large percentage of that film, I had like tears in my eyes.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. And it's Sally Field that's done that. It's the Sally Field portrayal. The way she, it's a proper performance. She won an Emmy for it, for goodness sake. So it's a proper performance, and it's kind of one of those roles that you imagine actors are really, really keen to sort of pick up, because it has such scope and so much in it. There's not just one character you're playing. You are playing multiple characters.
Yeah, this seems to yeah. launch Sally Field's career. Because, you know, after this, she was just inundated with awards and inundated with films as well. You know, yeah. If people don't realise, when I first looked at Sally Fields, I just think of Smokey and the Bandit. And then
everybody does. Yeah, it's a thing.
Well, and then you don't realise how much touchy stuff what she's done in the past. There was a brilliant one what she did, and I can't remember the name. It was the one where she has to rescue her child from Iran. Not without my child or something. And... well, I watched that with my wife, who's from Iran as well, and the portrayal yeah. of what she goes through as well, and she meets these people, amazing. And that was the only first time after Smokey and Bandit I've seen her as a real actor. She didn't really act in Smokey yeah. and Bandit. It's just taking a piss, it's having a laugh, getting paid for enjoying herself.
Yeah, she is. That is a complete opposite to what this role is. Yeah. This role is utter serious. It's harrowing for the actress, I imagine, as well, who had to... Because she was, I think Sally Field has spoken about it since, and she said that it was, a lot of it was like you have to bring it from within. So she had to bring it from within this poor woman who's had such a horrible childhood that has affected her in such a unique kind of way. And yeah, it's just, it makes me cry even thinking about it, just because
it's
to witness somebody having such a breakdown, and in such a manner that's you can every time she changes character, and when you come to understand why she's changing characters and what the root cause yeah. of it all is,
it's,
and it's slowly revealed over the film how she what sort of child abuse she was suffering, and you don't really find out until towards the end.
Yeah, so it's right at really the last part on. Where they find out with the pain. But what I was thinking as well is this was made in 1976, like Sybil.
Yeah.
I cannot think of a film going back for any further which dealt with the similar issues for her to take some kind of inspiration for doing this role. I wonder how much, I know, I mean, I can imagine she must have gone in to see psychiatrists and talk about it, because at that point as well, it wasn't a common thing, because the people listening to this now, after that, there was a rush of people who was misdiagnosed or diagnosed afterwards, and the amount of percentage went through the roof. But before this film, where would she have got her inspiration from, apart from reading the book, talking to the psychiatrist, maybe even meeting the lady herself? So for her to convey all that emotion into, you know, the 3 hours of which we see as a film, you know, ticks all the boxes for a perfect star there.
I think Joanne Woodward, who played the psychiatrist, she herself starred in a film called The Three Faces of Eve.
Oh, yeah.
Portraying a woman with three personalities.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess there would have been some crossover there. She would have helped him. But to be fair, once you've read the book, you can really... You should be able to work out how it should be done.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of the way it is. And it's just... The whole dissociative identity disorder issue and the fact that this film raised, perhaps falsely, the narrative of multiple personalities, which nobody had ever really heard of. It hadn't been given much credence prior to this. But this raised it to the level of, like, people... This went out on, like, American TV.
Yeah.
This absolutely harrowing film over 2 nights went out over... normal telly.
Yeah, it would have got a vast audience.
Yeah,
then days it would have been a free view. You know, it's not like now where it's everything's paid for. So it would have been prime time television. So it would have affected so many people's lives, and many people who would have gone through similar traumatic experiences as well.
Yeah. It's a great film. I love there's loads of scenes in there that I find really evocative. But there's you see at the very start of the film when she's got a load of kids that she's supply teaching or just sort of assisting with the teacher in the park, and then she blacks out. She hears creaking of swings, and that triggers something in her, and then next thing you know she's stood in the middle of the pond and she has no idea how she's got there. She's blacked out. And all the kids are laughing at her, and that sort of goes on, and she goes home.
So
and
just
and
a question on that, because I know you've read a fair bit in. Is that like some kind of self hypnosis that you hear in something to trigger? Like I might smell something and I remember a time, but to get to the point to completely, you know, take over your senses, it's like she gave herself the. An audible way of hypnotizing.
It's more like traumas she suffered in her childhood.
Yeah.
Anything that's inextricably linked to that, which can trigger memories of that. Whenever she tries, because the problem with Sybil's main character is that she's so vulnerable and she's so kind of naive about things.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only way she can continue through life is she doesn't remember the stuff that she's dealt with.
Yeah.
And so what she's done as a child, she's disassociated into new characters whenever there's a girl who is really angry about the way she's been treated, but she can't let her out because her mother wouldn't allow her to express that. So she's internalised that. And that comes out and Sybil doesn't know about it because it would upset her.
Yeah.
So Sybil, as the main core character, doesn't know when these other characters within her have taken over, because there was the ones that take over in order to deal with certain events. Like there's a very erudite character, one of herself, who's kind of an 18-year-old who's aware of everything and she knows what's going on and she can speak French and she's outgoing and vivacious. And when she appears in the film, it's like, well, who the fuck's this? But it's... it's that character deals with certain things. There's a character that deals with her having to go to college. She says at one point that she blacked out for 2 years. She, 2 years just disappeared. And those during those 2 years, she went to college. And because of the stress of going to college, would have... Sybil was unable to cope with that level of stress. A character within her that was strong and clever
took over.
And could apply herself and focus took over. And all these characters are there to kind of protect Sybil in a way. They're there to face the things that she can't face herself, like her sense of her kind of destructive urge to suicide.
Yeah, yeah.
There is one character called Marcy.
Yeah, she's extremely dark.
Who is just extremely dark, and she wants to commit suicide because Sybil can't contain that sort of information within herself because of all the ways she's had to split her life. This is something that's happened in her childhood that has made a fracture.
Yeah.
And each bit, it kind of looks after a certain aspect of her life and tries to hide it from Sybil, who's not aware of them. Like the altar, I think they're called altars.
Yeah.
The other characters in this. There's like 17 different characters who...
There's boys in there as well.
All have these...
She has two boys.
There's boys... Yeah, there's two boys in there who are basically do handyman stuff. Because Sybil wouldn't be able to cope with all that. It's just like she was that... Whether she is that vulnerable or whether the others or her psyche just perceives herself as that vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah.
Is I don't know.
Is there...
But there's like 5-year-olds, there's a baby, there's an 18-year-old, there's a girl that does music because her mother didn't like her playing the piano, but she really loved playing the piano. And there's a kid that looked, and the part of her that was a pianist.
Yeah. Oh, she records a play, yeah. Doesn't she? It's beautiful piece in there.
There's one scene where it's discussed that, like, Sybil wakes up every day or whenever she wakes up and sees paintings have been made. And she doesn't like to think about how those paintings have been there because she's an artist at heart. Yeah. And there's a character, I think she's, I can't remember her name, one of the characters who... is good at art and loves the art, but she collaborated with the boys to build a special shelf on top of the cupboard that Sybil didn't know about, where she could keep the paintings that Sybil couldn't see because it would upset her to see, or even it upset her to contemplate even that there were other characters. She didn't, it was that, I mean, and then Sally Field portrays it in such a...
perfect. Yeah. I think straight as a goal, like you said, she has her episode and she takes herself to the doctors because she broke her hand, she cut her hand when she smashes the glasses because she's constantly trying to get away, isn't she? She's trying to get out.
That's another one of her characters, one that when she's angry and she expresses her emotion by punching windows.
Yeah, is it?
And
Peggy used the one who's
Peggy. That's Peggy, the angry one. She's, I don't know what she's like. A 9-year-old,
right? She's full of anger.
She sort of was created at 9 years old.
Yeah,
through some event that had happened to her, where she's furiously angry all the time. She has temper tantrums. She breaks glass. But she's the one that loves drawing and painting as well. And each one of these has got their specific fears, like. Peggy's specific fears are hands and dish towels.
Yeah.
And music and the colour green and all these things that are specific triggers to her abuse that she suffered as a kid. Peggy has taken them on in her character so that Sybil doesn't have to. Sybil doesn't even remember it.
It makes you think as well when you're watching the film, because, you know, it's a true story as well. You're thinking, if Sybil is so... In her other selves, you know, Peggy, Vicky, Vanessa, etc. If she is so weak compared to them, why doesn't the others dominate her?
Because they care for her.
At what point do they give her back?
They're aware of what they are.
Yeah,
they're aware of what they're doing. What they're doing is protecting Sybil from the stuff she can't cope with in life.
Right.
Whatever that. Issue is there's a specific personality that's good at dealing with that kind of crap.
Yeah.
Like there's one when she gets into a relationship with a guy called Richard.
Richard, yeah.
who she sees across the street. From
he's such a nice guy as well.
He is. He's a dead nice guy. And they kind of get a sort of relationship going. And because Sybil can't cope with the necessary social awkwardness that ensues, there's a specific girl called Vanessa who's like a sort of red-haired girl, about 12 years old.
Yeah.
Who takes on the love and doing stuff like that. And
yeah, she's quite vivacious compared to all the others, isn't she? She's the outgoing one.
Yeah, sure. That's what I mean.
But then she was also the one where when she hears a specific song or a specific style because she likes the music, she then, her fear envelopes her and then another self comes in as well, don't she?
Yeah, you've got 17 to pick from. It gets ridiculous. But I mean, it's the thing about the whole film that gets me is it's empathy. When you watch a film, this is a good thing about films. Is like when you watch them, you can empathise with the characters, you can sympathise. And this film is perfect at bringing out the empathy. And all the way through, I'm like, all the stuff that Sally Field's character is doing, that Sybil is doing, when she's breaking down, when she's like, she suddenly sees a certain thing that triggers something and a childish figure comes out and Sybil goes away. All that you feel all the way through is, how did this happen to her?
Yeah.
What was it that did this to this person? What awful stuff must she have endured in order for this fracturing to happen?
That's it. When you're watching a true story, and if it's written and done in a way, you know, you can empathize so much with the characters, you get so involved. And because, like I said, it's 3 hours long and I took a break part way to go get my tea and came back, continued to watch it. I was supposed to be doing editing at the same time. I thought I'd watch it and do that, and I couldn't take my eyes off it. I was like, oh my god, I can't believe this is real. And then each part, as you go along, I started getting the wiki up. I started getting things up. I wanted to search of what happened to this poor girl in real life. Mm. And did you not find it where Richard's child understood that Sybil had these different...
Yeah, yeah.
Because a child sort of has its open mind more.
Yeah. Well, I think that was the reason that this thing happened to Sybil, is because she had an open mind with regards to... Because an adult wouldn't be able to do that because their personality is so, it's ingrained at that point. Yeah. But a child is, especially when she's what, 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever, is so easily, is so open to new ideas. And I don't know how the idea came to her that in order for her to cope with what was happening to her, she had to have different characters that sort of helped her manage life after that. Yeah, but it's a great film. And I'm really pleased that like I get to talk about it, because it's a film that has properly affected me in terms of I just felt so sad for her.
Yeah, yeah.
All the way through, I just thought every time you get the little glimpses back into the past.
Yeah.
And they, because her mother wasn't nice, let's put it that way.
No.
And you get little glimpses all the way through the film of her mother just doing slightly weird stuff, and her mood would change very quickly, and she'd be cruel, she'd be tripping Sybil down the stairs.
I think that's one of the first instances, isn't it? You understand that there's something going on, because just the way her mother is portrayed in it, because she comes across quite brutish, and she's got such a strong connection with her grandma, which one of her identities becomes like the replacement of her grandma, doesn't she, when her grandma passes away. But one of the first shocking parts which you find is that she's only 5. She's running down the stairs for her mum, and her mum trips her up on purpose. And then she knows she's done wrong, her mum. You know what I mean? And then she's saying...
But the thing that's even more chilling about that, just after that, she walks through the swing doors into the kitchen and just smashes the door back into her kid's face as she's coming through, and then laughs about it. She's properly a sick person as a mother.
It annoys me the way the film it's made it to do this to you as well. You see immense sympathy for what Sybil's going through, but enormous rage on the fact that her father must have seen what was happening. How could it be how could he not know what was going on?
Well, this is, and I hate to draw a Twin Peaks parallel, but her father is essentially Sarah Palmer in this. She's she's tolerating what is happening because he refuses to believe that his wife would do the things that she must have done. And it's when the psychiatrist goes back to her old family doctor from when she was a kid. And he's sort of lists just the usual kid ailments. Then he realizes the fractured collarbone, fractured larynx.
And then it rushes back to him, then, doesn't it?
And then she goes to the father and said, "Did you like ever think that like anything was going on?" No. She wouldn't do that. She was a saint. Her mother was.
There's a part. There's that part with the doctor as well. Just to bring that back up, where he's obviously an old dittery doctor, like you're getting your villages and stuff like that, and he's seeing everything, and you know people come and go, and there's a point where you can see it in his eyes that he knows he's done wrong, and he turns to her and he starts mentioning what has happened to the poor girl in the past, and he turns to the psychiatrist Drunty and asks more or less for forgiveness, like, why didn't he bring it up?
The thing is, though, that this would have been in the 50s, that this was really happening. The thing is that there was nothing in place to deal with this sort of mental sort of issue.
No,
I mean, the mother was clearly, at one point, the father said that she went to the doctors, she had a breakdown for an entire season, didn't say a word to anybody. So she went to the doc. They went to took her to the doctor's hospital, and they said she had paranoid schizophrenia. But then she said to her husband, "But they were crazier than I am. Who are you going to trust?" And her father was like, "Yeah, that's fair enough. That's nice logic. You can't argue with that." And that was, he was happy. He was a tacit participant in what was going on with her father.
Yeah.
He wasn't the abuser. His mother was in this instance.
Do you think because at the time, like it is as well, I don't know, we're going to come back in and out of the film because it's a true story, isn't it? Like you said, in the 50s, there was a lot of experimental psychology going on in the 50s. Some wrong, some right. There's also experiments with MDMA. Which is the ecstasy drug in family counsellings and stuff like that. And this was quite prominent in America. Do you think people were just thinking they're just a bunch of loonies? You know, you get the typical thing of these are just loonies.
Well, the thing is that you can't really... In the 50s, they wouldn't have been very eager to take a kid away from the parent regardless of what was happening because it was seen as that was their place to be with the parent, regardless of whether the parent was a twat or not. And I think we've learned an awful lot since then. And now we have the capacity as a sort of society to deal with that in a proper way, rather than just letting it go. We address these issues, and that kind of leads to a better management of like psychological problems that she's suffering. But It's not forgivable. He does ask for forgiveness a little bit, does the doctor?
Yeah.
But the chilling part of that is when he's listing, what he found when she had a bladder infection, Sybil, when she was a kid, and he brought her in, and he says what he found, she was never going to have a child. It was internal scarring. At that point you don't know what the fuck's going on because you don't see. You don't know why that would have happened to her.
No, you don't.
Because the film has not yet revealed that. It does later on.
But even at that point, because it's true, you get such a cold feeling in the entire body, don't it? And at that point, alarm bells are starting to come to think, you know what? Because it was the first time I watched it, I was thinking, shit, maybe it's a father as well. You know what I mean? Because of what he described. And instantly thought of the most disgusting thing ever, because it sort of drops that in your mind and it's like, is it a mum? Is it a dad? What the fuck's going on? It's horrible. Poor woman.
Well, when the doctor confronts the father, when the psychiatrist confronts the father and about the fractured larynx, and he's like, well, how would a four-year-old get a fractured larynx? And he says, oh, his wife just said that she ran into a clothesline. And he believes that. But And then Doctor goes, well, how would a four-year-old run into a clothesline, which is like 6 foot high? And he's like, oh, yeah. But he just still can't believe it. He's deluding himself a great deal. There's a lot of mental issues in the entire family. I mean, that's another part of
sadness. I think it's also because of where he was. Because it sounds like a little town area, and this one doctor ran the whole area, obviously a busy guy. But it's also quite small town mentality. I mean, things happen behind closed doors. We just keep hush about that. Yeah. You can imagine if taken out of that situation and she grew up in the city, you would hope, because of multiple doctors, one of them would have triggered something's not right here.
Well, I don't know. It was maybe of its time, perhaps. The 50s weren't very enlightened in that term, so I don't
think. No, because you're quite glossy, of which another reference to David Lynch likes to bring out in a lot of his films.
It does. Two references. We're winning.
I'll tell you one which struck me a chord is the music in it, the score. Yeah. It's really
I think it won awards, didn't it? I think it maybe did. Yeah, Leonard Rosenman, a standard achievement in musical composition for a drama. So yeah, it won awards too. I mean, I was always looking at the film in terms of, it's a TV film here, right? We're not going to be extracting particularly deep and meaningful stuff, but we do get some really interesting shots. Yeah. We get some chilling music when you kind of hear the ominous music come on and you see slight Sybil's face scrunch up and then she starts talking in a childish voice.
Yeah.
And like, don't touch me, I'm not going to touch you, don't touch me, and all that sort of stuff. That the music is really just ramping up the emotion that you feel. Yeah, it was very well done. It certainly affected me.
The way he did it as well was is using... And it's been done millions of times since on horror films, but not in as haunting as this, because it's true, is the tinge of child's nursery rhymes, child's toys being used in the orchestral moment. Like, it builds up, and then all of a sudden you hear, like, a little toy go... Ding, 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 and it's, whoa. That's the parts like that, and it's like, oh, my God. But it's trying to tell you that she was a little child at that point.
Yeah. Well, the thing is as well that this film, it's meant to be a drama, it's a TV drama movie, but in essence, I think it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
It's very hard because it is terrifying what happens to her, and you're trying to imagine that happening to you.
Yeah.
Or to be in such control where you can wake up, and she was used to having blackouts, so she didn't believe that, she thought everybody had blackouts. Why, and she just, this was normal for her. And it upsets you so much watching it. And the music heightens the tension. So it is a horror film insofar as it does bring out those sort of dark emotions within you.
As a TV movie as well, you know, you get the classic teen movies from the 70s, 80s. There's a big ramp up as well in the 80s as well. It doesn't feel like a TV movie, does it? If it's very well production, the production value.
Very nicely done, very nicely done. I mean, it's all the scenes are really well written.
Yeah.
There's nothing clunky about it. The relationship with Richard is heartwarming and also sad as well.
Yeah.
The way that the psychiatrist deals with her and the sort of patience that she shows. And then you've got Sybil, who I can't imagine what the script looked like.
Yeah.
But... It's just she every single scene, and a lot of them are done with just one takes.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of this, and it's like that's like almost theatre acting because you can't cut and redo.
It's funny you should say theatre acting because I actually written it in my notes. Is you could see this as a stage performance because the way he doesn't bring that much outside shots and probably good budget reasons as well. But it is good that when he does go outside, he uses on location, which is very much like a 70s film at the time, because more or less the 70s brought out using real life on location parts in the films, didn't they? Like Taxi Driver and Mean Streets and that. So he brings that element in it, so it's quite, you know, up to date and fashionable to use that. But the actual performances and stage performance, it could actually be a beautiful stage show as well.
Well, a lot of it does take place in the psychiatrist's office.
Yeah, yeah.
The majority. And we get to, see excursions out to when she's when she has an episode when Richard takes her out and tries to get this like shy Sybil to open up to her.
He's such a nice guy. I'm like, oh,
he's such a nice guy. Stay with him. and he brings her to Carnegie Hall where he's busking outside. Yeah. He's got quite a crowd with him, and she's loving it. She's like proper enjoying it, and then. She sees an umbrella, somebody with, you know, the hooked end of an umbrella.
Yeah.
And she sees a couple of them, and then she sees some grey hair. And all of a sudden, ching, 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 she's Peggy.
Yeah.
And she backs away, and she has no idea who Richard is. And Richard is, like, so confused as to why she's doing that. And then she buggers off, because the girl that's been with Richard, the girl that's vivacious, Vanessa, I think it is.
Yeah, that's right.
That comes out whenever Richard's there. She disappeared and Peggy arrived, and then Peggy ran away. And then Richard chased after her. And then Richard found her, but she'd gone back to Sybil, and Sybil really didn't want anything to do with Richard.
No.
She's like, oh yeah, okay, bye. And she's like, didn't think of anything. She wasn't aware of what had been happening. And
what got me was so when it's the Christmas scene with her, you know what? A bit welling up at the moment. It's a beautiful scene because she's dying to make a perfect Christmas. And she's talking to a psychiatrist, and he says, I just want it to be perfect for Richard. I just want everything to go well. I just want this to go well. And then she got in there, and you can see how much she's struggling to try and keep everything at bay. But then, you know... because of the bed scene, she has another episode as well.
Well, it's because she has a nightmare, and this nightmare you do get to see.
Yeah,
it's portrayed a couple. It's an odd fucking nightmare, to be fair.
Yeah,
with a headless cat following about and stuff.
It's really freaky.
It is really freaky. That's what dreams are. The nightmares are really freaky. But then. Because she wakes up out of that, she's not the same character that went to bed with Richard.
Yeah.
It's not Vanessa anymore. I think it's probably Peggy or somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
One of them. And then she's like climbing up the cupboard trying to get away, and because of this nightmare. And like,
that's right.
That's when she has that episode, and Marcy emerges, and Richard's like freaking out and trying to phone a psychiatrist. He's heard her name.
That's right.
He?
Yeah.
Whether that helps.
She turns.
But Marcy takes
that's
over.
That's right, the
puts
deaf
on a
one.
Veil.
Yeah.
Puts on a veil and then starts to walk upstairs really calmly. And she's on the roof, standing on the ledge, and saying, don't try to stop me. And eventually they do talk her down, but it's just.
There's a part in that, again, where you cannot help but fill up and feel so sorry for Sybil and Richard.
All of it.
Where she's. Yeah. I think she's. She's not Peggy, but she's one of the other ones. She's definitely not Sybil at that stage, or she's getting conflicting, or she doesn't know where she is because she's hypnotized. And she's saying, I hope Richard doesn't see this. I hope he doesn't understand what's going on. And Richard's just stood in the doorway, and you're like, oh,
yeah, that's.
No.
See, that's Sybil at that point. I think that is Sybil because she's been, the doctor's there.
Oh,
and
she's sedated.
And she just says, "I don't want Richard to know what I'm like, because I really like him."
Yeah.
And he's there in the doorway watching, and his tears in his eyes. And you know, he's thinking at that point. You realise after that
he has to go.
Moves away straight after that because he's got his kid to look after. And and she is that messed up that, you know, if she's going to be standing on ledges, wearing a bloody headscarf, as a completely different character to the one he knows, then, you know, you can understand why he would want to put a bit of distance between them.
It is harrowing. Well, and then from onwards, it moves on, and that's when you start, the psychiatrist starts pinning things together, doesn't she? She goes out of her way where she goes to see her own Sybil's father as well.
Yeah.
And
I think Sybil, I mean, it's 11 years of therapy that they're covering in this film.
Yeah.
And Sybil is starting to get better. She's starting to become aware. The other ones are starting to let her in, let her know that they're there. The whole resolution of the film is just basically after a good hour of just seeing all the different characters come out and where they come out and why they come out and the memories are slowly getting put together of the past. And at one point, Sybil says to the psychiatrist.
Yeah, Dr. Wilbur.
I've been making it up. It's not true. Yeah. I know, but is this where you expect Peggy to come out at this point? And so that's when the psychiatrist goes and finds proof, because there's a story about... this is one of the reasons she hates hands, she hates creaking noises. Yeah. Her mother doesn't like what she'd done for something or other, because she's drawing in purple, and her mother decided she didn't like that. So she ties the kid's hands together, hoists her up on a sort of winch.
Yeah, yeah.
To a top level of the barn, and then sticks her in a grain bin and shuts the door and just forgets about her. Her father finds her later, apparently. Her mother didn't sort of tell him where she was. She just leaves her there. And she's scrabbling the kid. This is when Peggy started to come out.
Yeah.
She's scribbling on the inside of the barn with that purple pen. And the doctor goes to her old home, finds that and finds the bit of wood that she scribbled on inside the bin, and cuts it off and brings it to her. And she starts to, at that point, she's starting to persuade Sybil that she has to get these, they need to bring everybody together and to make you one person. And that's, I mean, it's nice that we get a happy ending to the film. It's sort of.
Yeah, well, it is sort of, into, because you think, even after this, I believe that she still kept, you know, in contact with a psychiatrist, didn't she? As she went on for her life. And even up to the psychiatrist's death, left the real Sybil money in a will as well.
Yeah.
And then she sadly passed away in the late 90s, I think, as well.
But she did get cured, more or less, which is also part of the controversy. And there's that lovely scene where she's taken to a park, which is presumably because she's scared of green, because the green kitchen was where she used to get properly tortured. And she confesses that of the abuse that she really suffered at her mother's hands.
As part of the
getting everything out into the open so that she can start to fix herself.
Which, I hope listeners, you know, find this film. And I've actually sent it to a few friends. I was telling them they must watch it. It's a film to be watched. You can't really call this film a good film, can you? You know, when people say it's a good film, that it's like, man, this is about someone's life. Yeah, it's a good portrayal of what they're going through, but my God, it's a harrowing film to get through. Because when you get to that stage as well, and you still got to think in your head, this was a TV movie, it becomes touching on the side of, you can imagine if it was an 18 certificate easily given, because it's psychological torment of when they put you through what happens to the poor girl.
Yeah. They show a lot more than you would have expected to have seen in a TV movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You get to see basically a 5-year-old kid getting her legs tied up and getting hoisted up on a lamp when her mother's giving her an enema.
Yeah.
But it's not suggested that's the whole scene. You get to see
implements.
That kid getting hoisted up, you get to see implements. Yeah. And then obviously the next bit is sort of suggested, but that's why when you get the ending, when Sally Field is in this field and her other characters reveal themselves to her, and she basically, and it's all happening in her mind, but she embraces all these other different characters, even the really angry one that can't stop clenching her fists all the time. And then she starts to fix herself and bring herself together. And that's why, that's the end of the film is the fixing of Sybil, and it's a beautiful thing to see after you've just witnessed 3 hours.
Yeah.
A bloody torment. It's.
Did you not find the way they filmed the last part as well? Because we know it's for TV movie. They had 11 years to compile into one from the book,
yeah.
and at least the people were still alive for them to ask good questions. But I know you and I, we look at films now probably in slightly different ways after watching Lynchian films. There's a shot where she sees her first self, her first other self, yeah. and she stood up looking at a tree, and a tree goes up and then splits into two, and she sees her first self.
Yeah, I noticed that, yeah.
And there, like, to say you are the same person. It's things like that,
it's
like, where...
It's the trunk and the split exactly. branches, and it's indicating she's coming together as well.
Yeah, so is it...
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, it's a TV movie, but it a lot of care and effort has been put into making this actually a good film. In terms, it's not a happy film,
no.
by any stretch, no. but it is a very, very well put together film, and you don't feel at any point that you're out of the loop in terms of when you're a viewer. You've just absorbed in it, and the film helps you all the way through to keep you on board and keep you sort of invested in this character, and that, especially because it's a true story, you do find yourself just in tears watching it. It's just harrowing to watch. And that's good entertainment.
That is good entertainment. It's testament to the actors and testament to the director. And I had a look at the director, Daniel Manitz-Petri. He's not really done much else except a lot of TV and a few,
yeah.
in my eyes, a few dodgy films like Cocoon, The Return. But you yes. do a piece of work like this, Emmy Award winning TV, you'd think he would have had offers thrown at him. Oh, I wonder if he just missed that opportunity and it hit Sally instead, because the person who shines in the entire film is Sally.
Yeah, she's excellent in this. And it makes, when you watch her in things like Smokey and the Bandit, you do... Whenever she appears in anything, I do remember this film.
Well, that's it now.
And I remember what it's done to me.
My lads, Cameron, loves Mrs... The one with Robin Williams where he dresses up as a woman.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
He loves that film. So he had it on and I saw her and I was like, oh my God. And it just rushed, came back. And that was only yesterday. I was like...
I mean, it's nuts that she does proper acting and stuff in all the things she does, but she does get picked for a lot of comedic roles and light-hearted roles. But she's got such scope and capability as an actress that you see fully in this. She must have put everything into this performance. You can imagine her going home like in tears herself at the end of the day.
Yeah, it must be. And she's got one of those faces as well. It's look like the girl next door face, don't she? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the believable being Sybil, to be that person is quite naive, because you can see it in the features as well. You know, when some actresses out there and they just pick them because they've got a big name, and you're like, whoa, Angela Jolie, she's no girl next door. You know what I mean? But she's trying to portray that. With Sally Field, she's got that look, hasn't she?
Yeah. I mean, she's got that librarian look all the way through this film as well. She's a... But when you contrast that with one of her other characters, the Vicky, who's like the French socialite girl, who's all posh and well-dressed.
It's brilliant how she switches. She switches instantaneously.
There's a really nice scene where the doctor is showing some pictures of Sybil's different characters to Sybil. And you can see each of them. You've got a picture of Marcy, you've got a picture of Vicky, and then you've got a picture of Sybil. And it is like three different women. Yeah. The things that Sally Field does to get herself into these different sort of idents is just a remarkable bit of acting. And it's this is why I picked this film, is because you see a proper tour de force. You see a story that's so emotionally draining to watch. And the film itself is an acceptable movie that does its job really well. It ticks a lot of boxes to this film. It's a very good film.
I'm glad that you got me to have a watch it. I really am, because on Shep's Deep Dive, I usually pick a film that I've already seen. So I'll talk about with people who they haven't seen it before, and it's kind of interesting, you know. That's what I like when someone's not seen something, I really invest in time in and effort in. Yeah. Like you've come on You've done Eraserhead with me. You've done Man Bites Dog with me. And I like the way seeing your reaction and seeing very similar that you've got it. And it's like, oh, you get it. Mm. And it's sort of the tables have turned on this one. So you brought me a brand new film and I'm like, wow, I liked it so much. I invested time and effort to try and track this person down. I was looking, what's happened to this person?
I was confident that, I mean, it's very, very weird. Watching a film is a subjective experience. And so it breaks me every bloody 10 minutes in this film. I'm like watching it literally through blurry eyes of tears, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that translates to everybody who watches it. Some people may watch it and be more analytical about it. And some people, again, might watch it knowing the controversy of this film and this book and what it did to the sort of field of psychiatry, that might not be able to enjoy it in the same way that I do it, which is why I kind of like insist on watching it and I forget all that controversy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Assume it's a true story.
Yeah.
And because that is the way the film was meant to be viewed and that's the way I experienced it most. And to mar it with like the controversy stuff does diminish a little bit from the film watching experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, but you got to disassociate yourself from that and watch it from that perspective rather than from knowing that it might not be true, it might be fake. The relationship between the actual Sybil and the actual psychiatrist might not be as clear cut as we see in the film.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. There is some controversy.
I read quite a bit on the controversy part, and I also did a couple of, you know, YouTube vids and stuff like that when I was reading about it. But at the heart of it, there was a young girl, and whatever she was going through, she went through a lot of this shit.
Yes,
which to me overshadows, all right, if someone wanted to do this or pigeonhole them by this or this or this, okay, but at the heart of it, that poor person had been through some shit, which is frightening.
The controversy is not with whether Sybil made it up.
No, it was the
controversy is whether the psychiatrist manipulated, who was Shirley Mason, was the actual person that it's based on.
Yeah.
And she, it might have been that she was very easily a very suggestible person, and the doctor was looking for a way to make her name in psychiatry.
Yeah, yeah.
And the multiple personality disorders had been around, but they weren't officially in the sort of book of psychiatry. There is a book of psychiatry out there that lists all these conditions and what they are and how they're referred to. And this film essentially got multiple personality disorder, which later became dissociative identity disorder, into this book of psychiatry. And there's many people who think that it shouldn't be there because if it's true that, I mean, there's evidence to suggest that she was hypnotising Shirley and trying to make her, persuade her to do this multiple personality thing. And so I put suggestible in a suggestible manner, and she was like giving her barbiturates all the time. She's giving her drugs and stuff. It may well be, and it's quite dark to consider that the psychiatrist might well have been manipulating poor Shirley and her situation in order to get herself a name.
Yeah,
and she did, and she wrote the book, and she didn't write the book. A ghostwriter wrote it for them, for Sybil and the doctor. But she found little to corroborate what the psychiatrist was doing, and it's very odd, particularly because at the end she just gets better, and that generally doesn't happen.
And it's
rather convenient for a narrative to have that closure to the story. And like I say, there is issues, and even now dissociative identity disorder is not particularly considered by most psychiatrists as a viable diagnosis ever, and it is popularized by things like this, which lots of suggestible people out there do right.
Yeah,
the statistic given that I saw was around the 60s when she was diagnosed and cured, there were 79 cases of multiple personality disorder worldwide, and after that in the intervening 10-15 years after the film and the book came out. There's now like 80,000.
Well, also, wasn't there, I think I read a similar statistic, but wasn't it also predominantly in the West and a high amount in the North America who would have been preceding watched from this film as well?
Well, you're always going to get a biased psychiatrist, yeah, seeing what he wants to see in order to meet a diagnosis that he wants to make. And you've also got suggestible people who've seen similar things, that's me, and then emphasise that in order to get attention back. It's a very murky waters that we're treading in at this point.
I sent a copy of it to my sister-in-law, well, to her boyfriend, to watch, because she's a child psychiatrist in America. She's a doctor over there. And I know psychiatry in America is more prominent as a means for people to go to than would be in the UK. It is now more, perhaps. But when we were growing up, it was always like, fucking hell, those Yanks are always seeing the shrinks, aren't they? But now it's becoming more acceptable. But in America, like she said, it's like it's not uncommon to have one more or less assigned to per school as well.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I think that's, I mean, you know full well, I mean, just in our group of friends, we always have people that have, like, issues.
Yeah.
And that's, like, in a small group, imagine, one psychiatrist per school would be minimum, I would have thought. I think it's something that's, like, there's a stigma attached to mental health issues.
Yeah.
That is very slowly being worn down, but it's still there. There's still a stigma there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're going in the right direction, but I think it doesn't help to have people trying to force a diagnosis on things.
Yeah.
It might be nice to people to think, or it might make them feel special.
Yeah, yeah.
To have, I've got multiple personality disorder. But, it's just muddies the water, and it's a very weird field.
Yeah, it is definitely. So, thank you again, John. What a film.
No worries.
What a film. And I cannot, if people are listening to this and not seeing it, please go out and see it. If you want to be mates, give us a shout, I'll send it to you. But please watch it, learn about it, read the wiki on it. It's important. It's not a big blockbuster. It wasn't, but it really should be, I would say, viewing by teenage audiences upwards. You know, please see what this poor girl went through. Thank you again, John.
It's a 10 out of 10 film. I can't recommend more, to be fair.
Yeah, yeah. You can't really give it a number because some poor girl went through all this shit. It's a brilliant performance, brilliantly directed. Like I said, it's a shame that the guy's not really done much else. And excellent score as well. Oh, yeah. I must know, it's on my note here, Paddy. The guy did the score also for the animated version of Lord of the Rings, which I loved. I don't know if you liked that.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Yeah.
I was always like, where's the next one?
It ends in the middle of nowhere, but yeah, it was fun. I really loved that.
It was
so
trippy. It's so far out. You watch it now, you're like, I enjoyed that.
It's like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs type animation, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's live action. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, thank you very much, John.
No worries, man.
Cheers. Can't anybody see? We've got a war to fight. Never find our way. Regardless of what they say. How can it feel this wrong? From
moment, how can it feel this wrong?